Good morning, everyone. Welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's Nick Wright. You got Kevin Wildes right next to me. And on my other side, Brian Westbrook joining us. Coming up on a Wednesday, maybe? It's Wednesday, I'm pretty sure.
Good job. It is
Wednesday. They're all blending together. Thank you. Why are teams passing on Cam Newton? We're going to break that down. Our guy, Jay Glazer, says Stidham is the quarterback of the future. Tell you why he's saying that. And who's going to have the last laugh, Brady or Belichick? That is where we start on this now Wednesday morning. So, guys, on the one hand, you got an energized Bucs team with Brady and Gronk and some weapons and a ton of optimism. And then on the other hand, you have the Patriots who... they don't seem to have any of those other things. NFL.com has the Bucs as the fifth best offense, while the Pats didn't even make their top 10 list. So who's going to win more games this season? Well, how about this? Fox Bet has the Bucs as just half-win favorites over the Patriots, with Tampa coming in at 9.5 wins and the Patriots at 9 wins. Nick, who do you want to see be more successful this year? The Tampa Bay Buccaneers or the New England Patriots?
Who do I want to see be more successful? Now, that's very interesting, because I am wired to root against New England. Not the region, the team. It has been built into me. They're 20 years. I'm 35 years old. So for the entirety of my young adult into adult life, they've been awesome. If I were ranking fan bases on level of obnoxiousness, I'm not saying they'd be number one, but number two would be too low. And it would appear I'm involved in some type of feud with their most notable player left on the roster, Julian Edelman. So for all those reasons, I will be rooting for Tampa Bay. I got nothing against Tom Brady, and I love Bruce Arians, so I'll be rooting for Tampa Bay. But I feel like the America deserves to know who I think will be better, and New England should be better. Like, I should end up disappointed in this. New England last year went 12-4 despite having a mediocre offense and mediocre quarterback play. The defense and the coaching staff should be excellent once again. And Wildes, most notably to me, that division, you're not going up against Drew Brees, Matt Ryan, and Teddy Bridgewater. You're going up against Tua or Fitzpatrick, Sam Darnold, and Josh Allen. And I know all of a sudden people are high on the Bills. They still have a quarterback who has as many career 275-yard passing games as I do. So I think the Patriots are far better set up to be more successful this year and win the division. But Wildes, I'll be rooting for the Bucs over New England this year.
Okay, Nick, I'm going to throw it back to you in a second. I think that everyone is rooting for the Patriots. Just how everyone says they hate Duke basketball. I hate Duke basketball, but I don't want to see them fall too far out, because then I have no one to root against. It's a little Scarface Bill Belichick. Like, you want someone to point your finger at and say, that's the bad guy. So I actually think you're going to be rooting for the Patriots.
Okay, well, you're wrong. I appreciate your Duke basketball analogy, but some of us actually root against Duke. Some of us, aside from the Zion year, we don't want Duke to be good, but not great. We want Duke to be bad. Now, I know there's some people out there that are Patriots, Duke, Yankee, Laker fans. Like, I know those people exist. I'm not one of those people. So, no, I will be rooting against New England. But, Jenna, unfortunately, I fear New England is going to win 10 or 11 games and the division once again.
Okay. It's adorable when you both disagree. So, Brian, let's bring some reason into this conversation. Which of these two teams is better set up to succeed? The Patriots with all that experience, or the Bucs with the weapons they really have right now and all that optimism?
Well, you know, I'm going to go with the Bucs. And I'm a guy that roots for the player. And Tom Brady, being a player, being a guy that's trying to do it again this season in a different place, to me, there's value in that. There's the ability to lead a football team that has underachieved under Bruce Arians last year. And in the past, you bring in Gronk. To me, this is a recipe for success. And here's what I have both of these teams. So I have the Bucs ending up being 10-6. That means they're going to be 4-2 in their division. they'll be 3-2 at home, 3-2 on the road. I actually have the Patriots being a little bit worse, being 8-8. That means they'll split the division. They'll play, they'll win against the Jets, they'll lose against the Jets. They'll win against the Dolphins, lose against the Dolphins. They'll kill same thing with the Bills. And then I have 5 losses. The Texans, the Chiefs, the 49ers, the Ravens, and the Seahawks for the Patriots. And so that means they're going to be 8-8. They're going to be an average football team. And I think this may be the season that Bill Belichick, as a leader of the Patriots, the that does everything, finally says, you know what? Maybe I made a wrong move in the player evaluation side of things. Maybe I made a wrong move with getting rid of Tom Brady, the same way I made a wrong move and getting rid of Jamie Collins, who you ended up bringing back. The same way you made a wrong move of getting rid of Asante Samuel, who went on to 3 Pro Bowls as a member of the Philadelphia Eagles. To me, it was a bad move to get rid of Tom Brady, and I think this would be the season that is going to cost him just a bit.
Wilds, you don't buy it?
No, I like the idea of like how we brought back Jamie Collins. We're going to bring back Tom Brady. But, Brian, I had a question for you. Since you're an ex-player, do you find yourself rooting for Tom Brady because sort of like you're in the same age group? And if you were a rookie, like rookie Brian Westbrook, do you think rookie Brian Westbrook would be rooting for Stidham?
No, I don't think. I probably do root for Tom because he is kind of in that same age bracket as me. I should be rooting against him because they beat us in the Super Bowl. But I like guys that have been around. And I like the player. I think that Bill Belichick feels it's the coaching that has got the Patriots over the top. And I believe it's the players. I believe that Tom Brady's excellence and his ability has got him over the top, not just what Bill Belichick does as a coach. And I'm not trying to take anything away from Bill Belichick because we all know that he's a terrific coach. But to me, coaches, great coaches without great players, they don't make great teams. They don't make successful teams. To me, great players and great coaches make it successful teams. And I don't know that Bill Belichick actually believes that or feels that way.
Hey, Nick, I got a question for you. Who's under more pressure to succeed this year, Tom Brady or Jarrett Stidham?
Oh, I thought you were going to say Brady or Belichick. Listen, to me, Brady's on a free roll at this point because he's already the greatest of all time. Like, this is, no one holds Jordan's Wizards years against him. It's like anything he did there was a bonus. They never made the playoffs. His first year there, he shot 41%. But it's like, hey, who cares? He had already established himself at the time as the greatest of all time. And so I think Brady's on a free roll. I think Stidham is under the pressure of you are replacing arguably the biggest icon in the history of the sport. I think Belichick's under the most pressure, which is why I vehemently disagree with the idea the Patriots are going to throw this season away that I know some people are proselytizing, because Belichick is under so much pressure because he is the one that made the affirmative choice to move on from Tom Brady. So if I were ranking most pressure, I'd go Belichick 1, Stidham 2, Brady 3. But I have a question. I want to challenge Wilds on something. Because Wilds I'm Patriots over Brady. I'm Patriots first. And I feel like that's the type of thing you just say because you want to believe it. But take it yourself to this scenario. What do you think causes you more pain next year? If the Patriots fall off the map, are 2-14 and are awful, or if Tom Brady is awful and the Bucs are 2-14 and it's the football version of Willie Mays stumbling around in the outfield? Because I believe as soon as the Patriots, if I'm wrong and they're bad, as soon as they're 1-6, you start bringing out your Trevor Lawrence pom-poms. You start talking about this is all part of the master plan and it's all about 2021 and we have new Photoshops. If Brady is awful, I think it causes massive depression in the Wilds household. Tell me if I'm wrong.
In the whole household, the dog is depressed. Be bad. No, here's why I'm Team Patriots. This last 20 years has been an aberration in my mind because I grew up with the Patriots being terrible. So I'm actually in my element. I'm more in my element, being 8-8 and looking for wild cards. Like, I love that. That was my definitive Patriots experience. My definitive Patriots experience wasn't being great. My definitive experience, like you were saying yesterday about Jordan, how when you're young, you think that's the best. When I was young, the Patriots were terrible. So I'm comfortable with us struggling. So that's why I'm rooting for the Patriots, because that's more in my element. Does that make sense?
It makes sense. I think it's a lie, but it makes sense, Jenna. But hey, listen, you're taking Jenna's corner. Jenna's corner is supposed to be the one that makes sense, but it's dishonest. And now you're taking it from her.
What? There was no bus in sight. I just got thrown underneath one. We got to take a break, guys. Coming up, are the Green Bay Packers the most vulnerable team in the league? A Hall of Famer weighs in next. This is First Things First. Welcome back. Time for a little drawing of blanks, starting with Tua Tagovailoa, who may have worn number 13 at Alabama, but Dan Marino's number is untouchable in Miami, long retired, so Tua will become the first quarterback in Dolphins franchise history to don the one. Nick, Tua wearing number one with the Miami Dolphins is blank.
Stylish. First of all, I like the coolest numbers are the lowest numbers. I like receivers that have in the teens. I like quarterbacks wearing one, two, or three. I just think it looks sleek. And can we be honest about something, America? Through all uniform changes, yeah, through all the new modern advancements, the Miami Dolphins have arguably the most iconic uniform across all of sports. It looks great. The colors are awesome. Wow. The Dolphin looks perfect. And a number one Tua Tagovailoa. I'm a grown man, so I obviously don't wear sports jerseys. However, if that weren't the case, this would be the type of jersey one could wear even if they weren't a Dolphins fan. I love it. Great job by my guy Tua. It's going to be a great looking jersey, Brian Westbrook.
You said the Dolphin looks perfect? That was my favorite part.
I love everything about the logo. Yeah, the Dolphin. It's perfect. Sorry, Brian. It's a great logo. Yeah.
I never want Nick to design uniforms because the Dolphins have the most iconic uniform in the NFL.
Thank you, Brian.
That's terrible take. So that's absolutely wrong. But by Tua getting the number one jersey, he's trying to turn the Miami area into Tua's territory. Of course, he couldn't be number three because it's Wade County. That's Dwayne Wade down there. He has his name and number down there plastered over everything. But Tua, the number one jersey, will turn that Miami area into Tua's territory. I'm so excited for him and that young team down there.
I like Tua's territories. Before I give my answer, I need to address that Nick won't wear a jersey. Nick wears head-to-toe sweatsuits for 23 hours a day. So the idea that he's above wearing a jersey is insane. This is the only time I've ever seen him in a collared shirt. It's these 44 minutes and 30 seconds that we're on air. Okay, I thought it was great. Tua's going to be my number four, number one. The top five number ones, Nick. I know you're the list guy. Number five, number one is Jeff George. Number four, number one is Tua. The number three, number one is Kyler. Number two, number one is Cam. The number one is Warren Moon and Tracy McGrady tied. I went to another sport, but Tracy and Warren Moon, my two number ones.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's a great list. That's a quality list. Wilds with an impromptu quality list. And Jenna, if I may just quickly, wears sweatsuits head to toe all the time.
No, I don't.
Tony Soprano, some great icons of film and television. Everyone says,
but
dress
Nick,
for the job you want.
Velour.
The job I want.
So does George Costanza.
First of all,
come on.
Some of my sweatsuits are velour, and you dress for the job you want. That's one where you can wear matching sweatsuits all day. Go ahead, Jenna.
NFL.com released their top offenses headed into the 2020 season, and the Dallas Cowboys came in at number four. Dak's probably typing up that on fancy paper, right, to slide over to Jerry next time they negotiate. Nick, the Cowboys being ranked the fourth best offense is blank.
Pressurized for that man you mentioned, Dak Prescott, because when you remove the quarterback and you look at the teams around the league, you would say the Cowboys are number four offense at worst. Maybe better. $100 million man Amari Cooper, the guy a lot of people thought was the number one rookie wide receiver or going to be the number one rookie wide receiver in CeeDee Lamb. Highest paid running back in NFL history. Michael Gallup coming off a breakout year. Excellent offensive line. Everything you need to be an elite offense. As long as you have adequate if not excellent, quarterback play. So it's pressurized for Dak, and it's pressurized for Mike McCarthy. Mike McCarthy ain't Mike Zimmer now. He wasn't brought in because he's a defensive mastermind. He was brought in because he's supposed to help the offense go to the next level and the team go to the next level after they were kind of stuck in neutral with Jason Garrett. So for their coach and their quarterback, these types of offensive expectations are very pressurized for Ryan Westbrook.
You know, Nick, I think this ranking is misguided. Why, how are they the number fourth-ranked offense when they were the number one offense all season long last year? And I think it's just as misguided as the Cowboys ownership and brass, Stephen Jones, not giving their quarterback, their franchise player, the face of their franchise, a contract. It's just as misguided as that. Think about this. We talked about the Saints, the Ravens, and the Chiefs are better than them offensively. I think the Chiefs definitely are better than them offensively. The last time the Ravens played, their offense did not look very good. We also understand that it's a copycat league. And the Saints, that means that Drew Brees is going to get another five-game vacation in the middle of the season. Can Drew Brees play 16 games and have the same type of velocity on the ball that he had at the beginning of the season? I don't know. We haven't seen it in the last couple of years. He's had breaks and time off in the middle of the season. And so when I look at this Dallas offense, they upgraded the wide receiver position. They upgraded the coach position. They have one of the best running backs in the league, and they have a quarterback that had it coming off his career best season. Why wouldn't this offense be a little bit better than they were last year? Last year, they were the number one offense as far as yards per game in football.
I went with Packers-esque, Jenna, because like one of Nick's sweatsuits, McCarthy's very comfortable in having a high-powered offense. In his time with the Packers, Saints, Patriots, Chargers, and the Packers were one of four teams with 25 points per game and 350 yards. So, like Nick's sweatsuits, he's very comfortable having a high-powered offense.
Well, we know that these rankings aren't an exact science, so nor are Nick's outfits. Former scout and Pro Football Hall of Famer Gil Brandt was asked to rank the eight division winners from last season, according to their vulnerability heading into this year. Vulnerability. So how about this? Aaron Rodgers and the Packers came in as the most vulnerable. As a famous philosopher once said, that ain't great. But that famous philosopher also said, old people be lying. So I don't really know anymore. Nick, realistic expectations for the Packers this season are blank. I'm revving you up.
Oh, Jenna, I did not even think about that part of this. Because with respect to the Hall of Famer Gil Brandt, you know what applies to him? And these erroneous rankings.
Oh, no.
Old people be lying.
I do.
I mean, who's division winners more vulnerable? Yeah, thank you, Jen. I didn't even think of that. Division winners more vulnerable than the Packers. How about the Eagles, who we just talked about how good the Cowboys could be? How about the Texans, who we know what mayhem their offseason has been, trading away their second best player? Those are just the first two that come to mind. And one could argue that if everyone's right and I'm wrong about Brady and the Bucs, the Saints are vulnerable as well. By the way, the division winner in the West, the Niners, their GM and coach have been flirting with a different quarterback all offseason. Listen, the realistic expectations for the Packers in 2020 are division champs. To repeat as division champs for the first time since 2014, if I remember correctly. They won in 2016. Yeah, first time since 2014, they haven't repeated as division champs. What are we scared of in the NFC North? I'm just curious. Like, the Lions coming off that amazing 3.5 win season they had. The Bears, their big move was trading for Nick Foles right after he turned back into Nick Foles. Or the Vikings, who I think we know that they are a good but not great team. I don't know that the Packers are a Super Bowl favorite, but they absolutely should be division champs. So that's the realistic expectations with respect to the Hall of Famer Gil Brandt, who is proving America's newest catchphrase correct. Old people be lying.
Oh, no.
I love that catchphrase, old people be lying. I tell my parents that all the time. Old people be lying. But I'll say this. I think realistic expectations for the Packers this season is 10-6, 11-5, to be honest, which I would really err to the side of 10-6. I think they have tough road games. You have to play the Saints, the Bucks, the Texans, the Colts, and the 49ers on the road. And I think in their division, the Vikings will present a bit of an issue for them. And I think they had two tough games last season against the Lions. And I think both of those games were decided by 3 points or less. And so I still think in the division they'll be 4-2. But I think they'll have a tough road record. And with that, it'll be tough for them to get more than 10 wins.
Okay, America. I know we're talking to America directly now. Old people be lying is not America's favorite new catchphrase. Nick calls himself a truth teller, and that is an outright bold-faced lie. It is a nascent phrase that he's trying to push, and it's starting to take root. Jenna said it. Now Brian likes it, so it's been a disaster. I'm trying to tamp this thing down. I went on the Packers question. I was just happy that the Patriots weren't number one. We came in number four, so I'm adding Gil Brandt to the Jarrett Stidham fan club. Old people are not lying. It is a true statement, so thank you, Gil.
I'm sorry that I brought it up. I obviously started something. I will take it
back.
Thank you. Packers feel like they could be 8-8 and 10-6. I feel like it can go both ways with that team. All right, let's talk about the Eagles, your former team, Brian. They drafted three wide receivers, including first-rounder Jalen Reagor, and added Marquise Goodwin this offseason, which has Carson Wentz feeling, quote, extremely pumped. Nick, the talent and the speed and the talent around Wentz this season will be blank.
I think it's overrated. I feel like we've done this with Philly ever since they won the Super Bowl. We've looked at their roster and we've said, oh my God, every year we've done it. Oh my God, look at all this talent. And then I actually look at the names and I say, okay, what Philly has been great at, what Howie Roseman's been excellent at, is not having massive gaps in his roster where you have replacement level players or fringe NFL guys as starters. What I don't think he's been great at is accumulating elite playmakers and elite talent. The Philly last year, what was the narrative? That is the most talented roster in all the NFL. And all that talent got them what exactly? They limped into the postseason because they were in the worst division in football. And by the way, I think a lot of Philly fans feel the way that our star statistician Dustin Waite feels about their wide receiver draft pick. Of all the wide receivers we could have taken, we took him of 600 yards his final year in college, and now trying to convince themselves because of bad quarterback play, as opposed to maybe Howie Roseman, for as great as he is, hasn't shown an acuity to draft wide receivers, and we've seen that throughout his tenure. So I think it's slightly overrated. I think Philly's a good, fine to good team. I don't think that they have these elite playmakers on the outside, Brian.
You know, Nick, I think that, you know, there, when you look at Carson Wentz's season, it'll be questionable, just as questionable as it is, as it was to take Jalen Reagor in the first round when Justin Jefferson was still on the board, just as questionable as it was to take Jalen Hurts with the 53rd pick when you had an opportunity to pick other players at there that can help your quarterback. Here's the thing. I like Miles Sanders. I like his ability to get inside, outside, run the football very well. I like Zach Ertz, and I like Dallas Goedert. I like that offensively. But here's a big question I have. DeSean Jackson at 33, coming off of surgery, can he be productive? Alshon Jeffrey at 30, coming off of surgery, can he be productive? And then Marquise Goodwin, you bring him in, and he's a really good player, but he's coming off 2 years of injury. And this guy back here, he loves the Eagles too.
Who's that, Ryan?
He has a lot of questions about their offense. What is their offense going to do? It remains to be seen. It is questionable.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, that's a cutie. I love it.
This guy came in. You guys started talking about the Eagles, and we had to bring the little guy in. Who's your favorite team? The Eagles?
Yes.
Look at that face.
Yes.
That's awesome.
Go
try to top that, Wilds. What's your answer?
I know. Now I'm gonna try to give a take about athleticism. I gotta get my kid. Billy, come down. We're having a cute contest on the show. Brian's winning by a large margin. I went with Field Day, Jenna, because I asked Dusty, our researcher. Sorry. I said, give me the most crazy. You know, that the Eagles had a great draft, and he gave me the athleticism score. that the Eagles won in athleticism, which they take all the combines and scores and they try to mix them up into a metric. And here's why I said field day. It reminds me of when you're in field day in middle school and you look around like, wow, we've got all the best athletes. And then you like lose in the egg toss. Like, I don't know if the athleticism score matters, but it's a nice graphic to put up. So I'm going field day. Back to Brian's family. That's going to be the ratings.
Oh, Brian. Your little guy, Brian.
That's how homeschool goes. Sometimes they're in the office studying. Sometimes they're just running around.
All right, we're going to take a break. Wild's field day was single-handedly the greatest experience of my life every year. It's how I became so athletic. Wow. I killed the egg toss.
Jenna got 11 blue ribbons in fourth grade field day. Let me tell you about it. It was just
something.
Like those
it
promos, Brian Westbrook. Let me
back
tell you.
There you go. Welcome back. So we're talking a little Cam Newton and his football future, or, well, right now, the lack thereof. The soon-to-be 31-year-old still searching for a starting role in the NFL, and his former teammate Greg Olsen is perplexed by it. Said Cam is, quote, too good of a player not to be signed right now. So, Nick, besides the funny hats, besides the flamboyant pants, why do you think teams are passing on Cam?
Well, Jenna, the funny hats and the flamboyant pants at this point have to be part of it. I know you were joking, but that is... At this point, we're out of viable options as to why Cam Newton remains unemployed. We have to acknowledge this cannot just be about football. Not in a world where people say, Cam's not consistent enough. You know who was very consistent for six solid years? Joe Flacco. He was consistently awful for 6 years in a row after the Super Bowl. And you know what that got him? He was traded for in Denver with millions and millions and millions of dollars left on his deal. You know who was inconsistently healthy, or I guess consistently unhealthy? Sam Bradford. And that did not stop. Who traded for him? Minnesota, Arizona gave him 1 year, $20 million. You know why? Because quarterback play at this league is at such a premium if you ever show any high-level ability. Hey, Nick Foles. You played six amazing quarters in the last 5 years. How about we give you $80 million in Jacksonville? You stink there. How about Chicago trades for you? So this idea that it's Cam's health or consistency that is just keeping him out of the league right now doesn't hold water to me. And so you bring up the funny hats and the funny wardrobes, and I guess in the eye of the beholder. I look at Philip Rivers, who seems to have some worse on-the-field body language than Cam, who wears damn bolo ties to press conferences, didn't hurt him in getting $25 million from the Indianapolis Colts coming off a year where he was a turnover machine for the only team he's ever played for. So there seems to be a disconnect, and there always has been with Cam. Certain people see Cam and see a guy who's never been in trouble, has been amazing in the community, has won at the highest level at community college, regular college, damn near in the NFL when they went 15-1 and won league MVP, and is beloved by young fans. And some people see Cam and see a diva who wears funny hats, and to quote our friend Eric Mangini, is more of a star than a starter. And I think there's a culture gap. And I think there's an expectation gap, Brian, that Cam deals with that is part of the reason so many other quarterbacks get third and fourth chances, and he seems to be struggling to get a second chance.
You know, Nick, I absolutely agree with you there. I think there is a culture gap, and I think there is a gap between the perception of the people that are making the decisions of Cam's likelihood to play again in the NFL and what Cam is doing. To me, I only judge the player on the field. So I'm only going to address that because I think the outside the field things are maybe the part of the reason why he's not playing, but it should not be. And so I'm going to look at on the field type of stuff. I'm going to look at Cam as a passer. I think he can be much more accurate. I think he has a rocket for an arm, but he has to play better in the pocket. Here's the biggest thing that I think when you talk about why Cam isn't employed right now. The biggest asset that Cam had as a player was his ability to make plays with his legs and his ability to make defenses come up so he can throw over the top of them. And when you look at Cam's legs, you have to be worried about all the injuries, the shoulder, the ankle. You have to be concerned that he has 214 more carries since he came into the league than any other quarterback. That includes Russell Wilson. So when you think about it, that's just a lot of carries. That's a lot of touches for a quarterback that has been broken down these last couple of years. And I think teams, if you can get past the cultural differences, if you can get past the outfit, I think they may be a little bit concerned with that. And having him in the backer role to them probably isn't worth it. But I think that's a total mistake, and that's misguided judgment as far as teams and evaluators.
So, Nick, I'm going to throw the ball to you here. I've been watching all of Cam's Instagrams. He just released a new video on YouTube of him working out, and he looks great. We said Tua looked great off of a home video, and Cam looks even better. But I want to spin it forward into the season to see what could happen. Dan Patrick and Mike Florio had a conversation yesterday that I thought was fascinating. Dan asked Florio, what's the best case scenario for Cam? And Florio said a quarterback being injured and Cam comes in. And I said, oh, that's interesting. So we looked at, he mentioned three specific quarterbacks who got injured. One was Cam himself. Big Ben went down in week two and Drew Brees went down in week two. Now, if it, the scenario plays out like Big Ben, that Cam can come in and be the franchise quarterback for a little while, I think that makes sense. But what happens with like a Drew Brees situation? If a quarterback goes down, but is going to come back in week eight, and Cam comes in and is playing great, and now you look up and you've got a franchise QB, and you got Cam Newton on your team. I don't know if that works. I don't know how that would play out. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I don't think Cam's going to be brought in by a team unless they are in desperate straits if they're talking about bringing him in during the flow of the season. I do think Cam Jenna is playing a bit of a dangerous game here because I think he's banking on either a guy like Gardner Minshew just looking horrific in the preseason or there being a quarterback injury. But we don't know what the preseason's going to be. We don't know what training camp's going to be. Teams might come into this season healthier than ever because there might not be a real offseason. And so I understand why Cam's doing it. You'd rather it be available to all 32 teams than just the one team you sign with. I get that. But Jenna, and you were bringing this up before the show, it's a dangerous gambit that he is engaging in right now.
The other aspect of this is that he's already made it clear he doesn't want to be a backup. He wants to be a starter. A lot of these teams already have their starters in place, so they take them out of the equation. But, Brian, I'll ask you, if there is a quarterback in this league that needs to get out on the field in any capacity, that needs the reps, that needs to test out that shoulder, test out that ankle, it's got to be Cam Newton. The guy hasn't played since week two last year. He's coming off surgery. He's got to learn a new team, a new offense. How hard would that be for him to say, I'll wait till someone's injured, I'll hop in? They're going to want to get him up and running that week, if not the next week. It seems to me, and you're an athlete, you're a player, former player who knows this, that would be near impossible to ask a guy like Cam Newton to come right away, do that, and be successful.
I absolutely agree. And I think that's going to be his biggest problem because teams are still questioning how healthy is Cam. Can he be healthy when he gets here? Let's say he has to play in week six. Can he be healthy? Can he learn the offense quick enough? And I think they still have questions as far as his arm and not the strength. We know he has a strong arm. Can he be accurate enough to help us win football games? And to me, if I'm Cam Newton, and listen, and we have different perspectives. He was a number one overall pick. He was a great college player, all these different things. So I look at it a little bit different than Cam. But if I was Cam, I would get into camp and go win me a job. If I had an opportunity to compete for the number one position, let's say with the Chargers and Tyrod Taylor, if I had an opportunity to compete for the number one position, that's what I would want. I would want to get into camp, prove that I'm healthy, and then learn the offense, and then go out there and show the coaches that I can win. It's going to be much harder for him to come in week six or seven, try to learn the offense, prove that he's healthy, and then go out there and play in less than 7 days. It's really, really hard to do that in the NFL.
Don't you agree, Nick? Don't you see that being even harder for Cam Newton in the position he's in right now?
Sure, but we're saying he should take an option that hasn't been presented to him. Where is the team that has said, come in and compete for the starting quarterback job? That Brian, like,
well,
we
he
can't
made it
say
known.
He
should
do what Jameis did. Right. So, of course, Jameis is not competing for a starting quarterback job. He's the backup quarterback. Andy Dalton is not competing for a starting quarterback job. He's the backup quarterback. Brian is saying go to a team where you can compete. He can't just show up and say, fellas, I'm here. Like, somebody's got to want to bring him in. And maybe the Chargers would have, maybe that would make sense, but they drafted Justin Herbert. So that's Herbert and Tyrod Taylor. The Patriots inexplicably haven't shown interest. And I know it's easier for people to say it's because he's injury prone or because he's inconsistent that he doesn't have a job. But then explain to me how Sam Bradford kept getting jobs. Explain to me how Case Keenum got $36 million after eight good games being an undrafted player. Explain to me how Nick Foles has had two separate teams in the last 13 months be like, you know what? Let's sign up for the Nick Foles experience. How Joe Flacco gets traded for by John Elway. All those guys, their level of inconsistency, exponentially greater than Cam, and their apex of play in this league, exponentially lower than Cam. There has to be something else here. Brian, go. I know we got to be quick, but go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, I just think that traditional quarterbacks, like all those guys that you just named, they're more traditional quarterbacks, and they're easier to come in the secondary role because teams already know exactly what they're going to get out of those guys. There's a little bit of question around Cam. Do we have to change our offense to what he does well? Do we have to do more rollouts? Do we need to do more quarterback options, getting the ball in his hands? Do I have to change everything that we do offensively to fit Cam into our offense? I think that's some of the concern that some of the coaches may have.
I also think if he would open up and say, I'm willing, I just want to play, and I'm willing to play anywhere in any role, you wonder how many teams, how many more teams, if any, would open up with availability for him. All right, let's take a break.
Why would he do
Coming
that?
Up, is perennial MVP candidate James Harden, because right now he's unemployed. Is Harden on the verge of losing his head coach? Next on First Things First. All right, time now for some stories to start your morning. How about this? Our very own Jay Glazer believes that Jarrett Stidham is the quarterback of the future for the Patriots. With Glazer saying a lot of teams like Stidham coming out of the draft, with that making Wilds one very, very happy man this morning. But Nick, I'll start with you. I think I already know the answer. You think Stidham is a long-term replacement for Tom Brady? We found a highlight.
I don't, and those are great preseason highlights. But with respect to Jay Glazer, I don't have the sources that he has. I do know this: Arizona, the Giants, Washington, Denver, Carolina, and Cincinnati didn't like him that much coming out of the draft because they took another quarterback ahead of him. I also know that every other team in the league had the option to spend a third-round pick on him, and they were like, I think this developmental interior offensive lineman adds more upside. So, listen, the Patriots did it once with Tom Brady. Maybe they've done it again with Jarrett Stidham. That is a possibility. The other possibility is Jarrett Stidham is what almost all mid-round quarterbacks are, which is a guy you draft to be a backup that if he's your starter, it's because things have gone awry, Wilds.
Every day, the Stidham snowball grows. Today, Jay Glazer and also our staff, to take you behind the curtain a little bit, we're all at our houses, and it's very difficult to get video into the system because you have to get it, you know, basically from your house. So the fact that we now have Jarrett Stidham highlights is great. So add the staff also on the Stidham train. Let's keep it going, Brian. I love it.
You know what, I'm going to say this, and you're probably not going to like this a lot, Kevin, but Jarrett Stidham has a possibility of being the worst quarterback in that division. Josh Allen, Sam Darnold, and Tua may be better than Jarrett Stidham. We don't know that yet. What do we know about Jarrett Stidham?
Come on. Say?
For sure, we know Brian. That Jarrett Stidham is going to take the Patriots to the next level. I don't know that we know anything. To Nick's point, those are great highlights from the preseason. I want to see it in the regular season. It's a totally different game. I hope Bill Belichick knows what he's doing.
That's okay. We'll turn you into a believer, Brian.
Moving on to the Texans now. When their three-time Defensive Player of the Year, J.J. Watt, was asked about the team trading away DeAndre Hopkins this offseason, Watt said, that's, quote, above my pay grade. Nick, that's code for what? He didn't approve, right?
Well, listen, J.J. Watt's younger than me, so I can't hit him with old people be lying, so I guess I'll go defensive player of the year be lying. J.J. Watt, nobody is above his pay grade. He's the highest paid player in the history of the franchise until Laremy Tunsil took that title from him. Like, nothing's above his pay grade. I understand Bill O'Brien right now is drawing a head coach paycheck, a general manager paycheck. So he's got those. But those two combined don't equal J.J. Watt's $16 million he's scheduled to make this year. This is J.J. Watt doing what he's always done in Houston, which is be a consummate pro and a good teammate and not trying to raise any waves for the franchise. But J.J. Watt be lying here, Wilds.
Oh, boy. I think above my pay grade in the history of the English language has never meant anything other than I totally disagree with this move, Brian. I think J.J. Watt's being very kind, but overall is, like, very disappointed in the DeAndre Hopkins trade.
Well, if he's not disappointed, I'm not sure that he has any type of feelings at all. If you're a defensive guy, you want your offense to score more points. Are you going to score more points with DeAndre Hopkins or without him? The obvious answer is you're probably going to score more points with him on your football team. I think J.J. Watt, even though I like what he said, I think he probably would be the only guy on that offense, maybe outside of Deshaun Watson, that should be able to say, you know what? I think we're not a better team without DeAndre Hopkins. We needed this guy on our football team, and we're not going to have him. We will have to try to find a way to win. But without DeAndre Hopkins, it's going to be much higher, much harder. And I think he's the perfect guy to have said it if that's something that he wanted to do.
All right, let's move on to the New York Jets, who we haven't discussed in a while. They are signing soon-to-be 37-year-old Frank Gore. Frank the Tank, entering his 16th season with the third most rushing yards of all time. Bri, you played your last season with Frank Gore in the Niners. What kind of teammate was he? How impressive has his career been?
So there are just a couple of players that I remember that I love. Dawkins and McNabb and Hugh Douglas and LeSean McCoy was a young man when I was leaving Philadelphia. For Frank Gore, my last year of football in San Francisco just showed me a different way. I mean, he was the hardest working player that I ever been around. He goes out every single day and takes every rep in practice. Literally, when I got there in San Francisco, he took every rep in practice and would take every rep in the game for the first 7 or 8 games of the season. It was amazing. No one that I was around loved the game of football more than Frank Gore. That's why he's playing at the age of 37. Here's another reason why he's still playing. After having 200 yards rushing in a game, a regular season game, I was in the facility the next day on Monday. I run into Frank Gore at 8 o'clock in the morning doing squats, 300, 400, 500-pound squats, and then going out and doing sprints on the field. He does a great job of taking care of his body. No one deserves this more than Frank Gore. That's why he's the third leading rusher in the history of the NFL. I appreciate Frank. I'm so happy for him. I hope he gets the opportunity to continue to play until his son, who's a freshman at Southern Miss, comes out of college, and maybe they can play on the same team. That's just a wish of mine, similar to what LeBron is trying to do with his son as well.
I totally agree, Brian. That's great. If Frank Gore can play with his son, it'd be the first time in NFL history. We saw the Griffies do it in baseball. And we know the Bronny LeBron, Nick, we always talk about that might happen, because it'd be the first time in the NFL. The closest thing the NFL has ever had to a father-son relationship is when you and Edelman are tweeting insults back and forth.
Wow. All right. First of all, I don't even want to ask who the father is in that relationship. I'm just going to move on from that entirely. If Frank Gore were able to play an NFL game in the same season his son was playing, that would be an all-time accomplishment in sports history. Like, in baseball, we know it's possible, and there's obviously been some great football families, the Longs, the Matthews, and that I could go on further. And what LeBron's trying to do is special, but it seems more plausible in basketball because guys do play 20 years. In the NFL, it does seem impossible. I had never even wrapped my mind around it. But I also would have never wrapped my mind around the top 5 rushing leaders in the history of football. You have Adrian Peterson, the preeminent running back of his generation. You have Barry Sanders, who many people feel is the most talented, most gifted running back ever. Walter Payton, a unanimous top 5 back of all time. And Emmitt Smith, obviously, the peak he had in the early 90s, the longevity, the durability. And for Frank Gore to be right in the middle of that, it is an accomplishment that I feel like we've almost become numb to. It seems impossible. And we sat with Frank at the Super Bowl. Brian obviously knows him quite well. He is such a good guy. And for him still to be playing, it's I cannot believe it. I will say this. The one person who's, I would say, the news arrived at their doorstep and they gave him the little stroke of the chin would have to be Le'Veon Bell. Who knows? The coach was trying to trade him the moment they signed him. Now you've got a cheap, durable, older running back. I don't think they expect to give Frank Gore 300 carries, but Le'Veon became maybe a little more expendable if that's what they wanted to do, Jenna.
Even think about that. All right, we got time for one more story this morning, ending with the Bucs. Their newest tight end, Rob Gronkowski, might be playing football on the field. He is, though, defending his WWE 24/7 title off of it with his new head coach, Bruce Arians, as his biggest threat. So Gronk said this, imagine coming out of the meeting room. I'm like looking to my left down the hallway, looking to my right to make sure no one is out of the meetings yet. Then all of a sudden, boom, Coach Arians just comes out of nowhere with a flying elbow, takes me out, pins me, and becomes the 24/7 champ. That would be legendary. That would be an honor to lose to him. So, Nick, I ask you, could Arians take the title away from Gronk?
Oh, well, listen, I think he could take the title away from him. However, he's going to have to, he not only has to pin him, he has to find the belt. And my guess is this is what happened.
Oh.
When Brady was providing Gronk with the playbook prematurely a month ago against NFL rules, Gronk then provided Brady with his belt. And that's what Brady was bringing to Byron Leftwich's house in those duffel bags. He was hiding the belt there so no one can take it from Gronk. So Arians has to find it first. Maybe that can be part of the NFL's investigation, Jenna.
Okay, I'm going to rush that back, try to write that all down and follow it. We got to go. We're back here tomorrow morning. Till then, stay safe, everyone.